This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Stakes Week here at the Damage Report. We're going to be breaking down all that's at stake come next Tuesday, including such small provincial concerns as your health, which we'll be talking about later on today. But wait, I said we, not just me, but also Viviana returns to the Damage Report. How's it going, Viviana?
Hello, everyone. I'm doing as well as can be expected this many days out to an election. So here we are.
Stressful time, that is true. Stressful also because you've been going overboard with your work. You've been doing a show, haven't you?
Yes, I've been really kind of cranking away at this new show I've been putting together called Contextualize This. I feature some really esteemed professors. I just completed an episode I'm gonna be cutting up because we had some tech issues about wildfires. Really interesting stuff about prevention. You know, an ounce of prevention is, you know, worth, I don't know the saying, worth more than the cure, blah, 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 blah. So was Donald Trump right that we should be raking the forest? Yes, but they're federal grounds and that he should be responsible for, and he's not. We should be spending a lot more money in preventing these forest fires, these wildfires. So it's a really interesting episode. You guys can check it out on Facebook, on Periscope, and on YouTube, Contextualize This. Thank you, John, for the plug.
Awesome, of course, anytime. And I know you've had my wife Arlene has been on it as well, and
she's had
very good things to say about it. So everyone, tune into that. Also, everyone, you need to know whether you're watching on YouTube or Twitch, you know, the normal things: share the stream, like the stream, bing the bong, whatever you got to do. But also, please throw a little bit of love in the chat for producer Sophie, whose birthday is today. Does a great job on the show literally every day. She's responsible for almost all of my prep for the interviews that I do as well, if you enjoy those. So happy birthday to Sophie.
Happy birthday. What's your birthday wish for Trump to lose? We're going to get it for you.
Probably.
Blow out those candles, girl.
For her, either way. You know, we've got a lot of news that we're going to get to. We're going to be talking about Tucker Carlson, just about the most embarrassing segment on the news I've ever seen in my life. And it was scripted.
Brilliant man.
It's just an added layer of just, oh my God. So we're going to be talking about that. Jared Kushner is being ridiculous. There's just a lot of nonsense, but we're going to get through it together. And if you send us tweets, comments, super chats, all of that, we'll be responding as we go. I can see in the chat right now, there's a lot of happy birthday love going on for Sophie. Yes. So thank you to everybody for that. With that said, why don't we jump into some news? Donald Trump thinks it would be great, and possibly the only legal outcome would be to declare the election winner on election night. He's been repeating this ad nauseum lately, so prepared to feel a bit of nauseam. Here he is.
It would be very, very proper and very nice if a winner were declared on November 3rd, instead of counting ballots for 2 weeks, which is totally inappropriate, and I don't believe that that's by our laws. I don't believe that. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, so that was a crazy thing to say. The idea that it'd be very nice and proper, and then deciding, oh, that's not strong enough. No, it'd be illegal to count any votes after election day, which is an absurd claim. But that wasn't just a one-off. You also had him saying this.
Hopefully, the few states remaining that want to take a lot of time after November 3rd to count ballots, that won't be allowed by the various courts, because as you know, we're in courts on that. We just had a big victory yesterday in Wisconsin on that matter. So hopefully that won't be happening, okay?
Okay, so it's just super clear. He is going to do everything he can in the courts to stop votes from being counted. Not votes that are suspicious or votes of whatever, just any vote that it takes a little bit too long to count. And why wouldn't it, since we've refused to give the states the money necessary to do the counting expeditiously, and we've also screwed over the post office to make sure that it takes as long as possible for the votes to actually get there. We've done all of that, and now we're gonna try to stop those from being counted. So Viviana, the strategy is as clear and explicit as any political strategy I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's been years in the making, John. They've been working on sort of putting doubt in our public agencies like the post office. But this just shows how off base Trump really is, how just out of this world. He really gets all of his information from television. So if it's not announced on television the night of the election, then it's not real. And it's weird because it's so hypocritical that he's just constantly calling the media fake news. But yet, if it's not happening in TV, then it's not real, but it's also fake. I mean, I can't even follow this man. I mean, obviously we've known this. We've been trying to understand what he's talking about and make sense and rationalize. But it's like talking to a brick that just says, very nice, very kind. I mean, you'd think after this many years, he'd beef up his vocabulary a little bit.
Yeah, you'd hope. You want a little bit of pizzazz from your strong man, but we don't even get that. We've got a very low energy, low D fascist strong man here. Yeah. But anyway, and you know, in addition to the videos I showed you, we also had him tweeting big problems and discrepancies with mail-in ballots all over the USA. Must have final total on November 3rd, which again, I just want to be very clear about this because we're going to be trying to give a little bit of information about how the count is going to go in just a little bit. But just very clear, you literally do not have to have a final count on election day. I hope that goes without saying. But also, more importantly, you never have a final count on election day. It's not a thing that actually happens. Counts are done all the time afterward. Now, it is a very important distinction. Distinctions are important and people don't make them. Between, for instance, the news side of a newspaper and the editorial side of a newspaper, but also between news outlets calling states and the states themselves finalizing those count. We have become just very casual with projections being made. You know, NBC News will project a winner in Pennsylvania days or weeks before the winner is actually decided. Because statistically, it's extremely unlikely that the result would be anything other than what they projected. But that is not the final count. No. And both Donald Trump is implying that it is. Justice Kavanaugh earlier this week seemed to believe that the news outlets calling states are the final call. That's not what it actually is. And I just want to make sure that everybody going into what is likely to be an incredibly stressful and divisive election week understands that Wolf Blitzer is not the final dude. He doesn't actually decide who wins the state.
No, and we often see this with local elections. We often see local elections not being called for several days after voting takes place and sort of a micro version of what happens nationally. But I mean, it's clear when you watch the news, they say the projected winner. And you know, 4 years ago, I was like crossing my fingers, like maybe the projections were wrong. And let's not forget this big thorn in our side that is the Electoral College. I mean, nothing is for sure until those guys vote. So, and then it has to, those votes have to go through and get approved. So this has been the case since we started voting. And the fact that Trump is trying to sort of create this misinformation, and it doesn't help that large swaths of the country are undereducated. I'm sorry, they really are being misinformed. They're taking these articles that they pull from Facebook and they're taking them as verbatim, just like they take projected winners verbatim. But we've had a process in place. We've had early voting, absentee ballots, we've had overseas ballots, we've had provisional ballots, which, by the way, a lot of people get turned away at the polls because they're not registered or this, and even though they know they're registered, please don't leave. Please vote provisionally because those votes will count, God willing, at this point.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, what you're going to see next week, starting Tuesday, is that somehow those early ballots that will take a little bit longer to count because so many states have been barred from counting them before election day. This is again a strategy designed to create a crisis that will then be used as a pretext to destroy democracy. The implication will be that those votes are somehow more suspicious or that they don't count as much. Even Kavanaugh said that they would flip an election. No. The people who went and voted early arguably did more work. I turned in a lot of essays right on the deadline. The person who did it 2 weeks early, they're not more suspicious, maybe a little bit. How do they have that time management? I don't understand it in college. No, those people were working harder. Those votes count just as much. They do.
And a lot of times people that do early voting or vote, you know, absentee, which I'm a permanent absentee voter, and I re-registered this year because I had changed you know, locations and I wanted to make sure to vote for local initiatives and measures, but I never got my ballot. I still haven't. It's not going to stop me. And this is a different election. There are things that voting feels a little bit different this year. So they're using that to capitalize on the confusion and make it like, oh, well, that means nothing's real. That means that, and it's really, really vile. I mean, just the political strategies that are happening within this administration are fascist, it's scary where this country is going. And what's scarier is that people are actually following him blindly to the slaughter.
We've been talking for some time now about I forget the term that they give for it. It's effectively like the red mirage. This idea that because early votes are gonna be biased in a particular way, and the people who vote on election day are gonna be biased in the opposite way. Depending on your state, which of those they count and release the results of first could make it look like the election in that state was gonna go one way, and only later will it be turned. So let's talk a little bit about an example of how that's going to actually work. There was a good case study in this done by 538 in the last day, in particular how Pennsylvania might look. Let's give you some actual numbers. So their forecast estimates that about 6.8 million votes will be cast in Pennsylvania. We'll see. It might be more. A lot of people are voting, but that's what they're estimating. The average popular vote result gives Biden about a 5-point edge over Trump. That's right now in the polls. That means Biden would win about 3.6 million votes to Trump's 3.2 million votes, assuming that all of that is accurate. If the vote count followed what we saw in the primary in terms of the distribution of Democrat versus Republican early voting, less than half of Biden's votes would be in by 3 a.m. on election night, whereas around 70% of Trump's would be reported. So that means that we could be looking at a situation where Trump has about a 16-point lead, 58-42, based on approximately 60% of the total expected vote. But over the course of the next few days after Election Day, assuming the same pattern as the primary plays out, Biden would win 2/3 of the remaining votes, which would precipitate a 21-point shift in the overall margin from 3 a.m. on election night to the final result. And you can take a look at this little chart here, and it'll show how those numbers change from Election Day to afterward. The reason that I want you to see this example is I think a lot of people think that if there's a difference between the election day returns and the count that will happen afterward, what it's going to look like is on election day, you have a super close election. And then afterward, it changes a little bit, like Biden's up by 2 or down by 2, and then it swings that way. But that's not necessarily how it's going to go. You could have something like in Pennsylvania, which is going to be one of the most watched states on election day, with Trump looking like he has a dominating win that makes all of the polls look insane and ridiculous and biased. But all of those votes are still out there. We're not waiting for any new votes to be cast. We're talking about votes that have been cast over the last few days, last few weeks. It might massively swing the results, Viviana. And what I wonder is how people, regular people, our politicians, and how members of the media are going to respond if you have like a 16-point lead on election day, go to a 3-point deficit 3 days later.
This is why leadership is important, John, because we really look to our leaders for guidance. We look to our leaders for information. And right now, we don't have any leadership. And the GOP side, there is no leadership. There is only self-serving behavior that is shown to be extremely dangerous to our country. And we also have a situation where a lot of people are uninformed. And like I mentioned before, undereducated on this process. This has been the case always. We always have a situation when there's a close call. Sometimes they got to recount all the votes. And let's look back into the Bush versus Gore situation. We had somebody who could have challenged that in the Supreme Court. Gore could have really pushed against it. And this is where true leadership and the best interest of the country, it comes into play. We need to make sure that we have leaders that are going to protect this country and honor whatever this outcome is. And if it's a close call, we may need to go into a closer count and to really go through that. And we need the American people to be patient. There's a lot of impatience. This president is impatient. He demands things that make no sense, that are illegal. And he's going to challenge this outcome if he doesn't win. We know that. And he's setting up the standard. I tweeted just yesterday the way how quickly the GOP confirmed Barrett just shows how much doubt they have in Trump's ability to win. They needed to plow through that because he might not win. And it really just shows their true character of what's going on. And And you know, we're gonna have to really buckle down. That's why Trump and his administration are really trying to put out all of this information about mail-in voting and fraud, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not helping that some of the things that he's already done have affected us, have affected people getting their ballots. And the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic and a lot of people need to vote by mail, it's really making this, it's sort of a perfect storm. So I'm a little bit afraid of how it's gonna go. We're gonna have to hold on to our hats.
Yeah, the Barrett, I mean, at some point there could be a case specifically to not count after Election Day in Pennsylvania. How will Barrett rule? I think we have an idea of how that might go. But yeah, Election Day, if Trump is up by 16 points, he is going to declare that he has won it. And there's a chance that that could be enough to make it seem as if he would win the election. And so we're gonna have to see, how does the media respond to that? They have no excuses. They've known for literally months that this sort of shift is going to happen. We'll see how responsible they are on Election Day. And that's just Pennsylvania, by the way. Let's talk a little bit about how it's likely to go around the country. So now understand that in a lot of states, the winner, we have such a strong idea of who it's already going to be that some of this won't necessarily apply. Like California is not going for Trump. It doesn't really matter if California is slow in counting the votes. We know that. It matters overall for the total popular vote, maybe, but for the Electoral College, not so much. But all that said, only 8 states expect to have at least 98% of unofficial results reported by noon the day after the election. Wow. After the election, only 8 states. 22 states and the District of Columbia allow postmarked ballots to arrive after Election Day. So the timing on when those will be counted will depend on when voters actually return them. So you can't even necessarily start counting in 22 states and the District of Columbia until possibly a few days after. You will still be doing new counting at that point. You have states like New York and Alaska that will not report any mail votes on election night. Now in those two cases, it probably won't matter because New York's gonna go blue and Alaska's probably going to go red anyway. Officials in Michigan and Pennsylvania have said full official counts could take several days, and those are very much important. So again, these are different categories. Some don't matter, some really will matter. But the main reason I wanted to mention this, that I wanted to go through this is, we've been talking about how in a lot of states, like in Pennsylvania, the people who show up on Election Day are likely to favor Donald Trump, and then the results will favor Donald Trump, and then it'll shift blue over time. But that is not the way it's going to work in every state, and I have seen almost no conversation about this. In a couple of important states, it actually could work in the reverse way. So in states like Arizona, Florida, and North Carolina, initial results could skew in favor of Joe Biden because mail-in ballot totals will be released first. They actually are able to count the votes in advance. Places that report in-person Election Day votes first, like most parts of Virginia, will be like Pennsylvania. But that means you could actually see a red shift after Election Day in places like Arizona, Florida, and North Carolina.
I agree with you though, that's probably gonna be more unlikely because we know that GOP voters are not gonna mail in their ballots because they've been told time and time again that it's not real and it's fraud. So I think that there's a possibility that we'll see it go that way, but I think it's gonna be, well, we'll see what the early voting counts are. When we typically do have states that are able to count those early ballots, but it's gonna be a nail biter, John.
It will. And understand that in a few states that won't necessarily be important, but could be important, like Texas has no estimate for when their numbers will be released. It could take days, it could take a week, we don't know. Georgia could take at least a few days. That's a state that's been very close in the polls, even with some polls, Biden being up. So all of this information is available. The New York Times has a great breakdown on literally the schedule for every state. You can find that online if you're curious about the way your state is gonna go. But just understand that there's complex, multiple things working at the same time. And so just be ready for anything and don't, I'm gonna say this to you, I'm really saying it to myself for our Election Day coverage. Don't respond emotionally to every bit of breaking news and the numbers, because the numbers aren't final until they're final, and they ain't gonna be final on Election Day. So John Iderola, bear that in mind.
It ain't over till fat Trump sinks or cries.
Exactly. Hey.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, The host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Chuck Todd is going to both sides caring about the virus, I guess. Take a look at this.
When you look at both candidates, in some ways, one not taking the virus seriously enough at all, and one, if there's a criticism, might be, is he taking it too seriously, at least when it comes to campaigning? Marcos, let me start with you. Is there any part of you that's nervous about the light Biden footprint when it comes to campaigning, when it comes to the door knocking, when it comes to this stuff? It is probably the only hole in the campaign infrastructure, which is obvious why it's there. It's due to the pandemic.
Okay, so there's a little bit of attempt to backpedal at the end there. Like, no, I acknowledge there's a pandemic, it's bad. But saying Biden cares too much about the pandemic, I'm a jackass YouTuber. And he's a very serious person who gets paid a lot of money, is in charge of politics on that network and wears a tie and everything. And he just implied that a politician caring about whether people live or die in the run up to an election, oh, is that gonna hurt him? Is it bad? Oh, should he really care so much about the pandemic? What a ridiculous.
It's this kind of attitude that got Trump elected. Can I just say this about Chuck Todd? What story got him into the position that he's in? But Chuck Todd is not only a member of the Hair Club for Men, he's one of their failures. So I'm just sick of Chuck Todd being on air and talking this mess, trying to seem relevant. Get off your little soapbox, you have nothing to add. And a lot of these CNN pundits are sort of trying to walk this line to make it seem like they're fair and balanced. You know, we saw just what's his name? Van. I went blank on his last name.
Van Jones.
He's sort of like, well, you know, maybe those days are gone. We're not giving the GOP the benefit of the doubt anymore. They lost that three and three quarters years ago, even before that Trump got elected. They don't get the benefit of the doubt. They have been vile, evil, all of this stuff. And to consider that Biden is taking it too seriously, there are over 200,000 people dead. Numbers are up across the country. I just spoke with a close family friend of mine who's a retired nurse. Both of her daughters are nurses. She has 11 essential workers in her family. She was in tears, John. In tears. There was just a story that was on the Wisconsin Public Radio. And as you recall, Wisconsin was a very pivotal state in 2016. It really changed over. We had not seen it go red. And now there's a lot of mass scofflaws over there. We have two major, and I lived in Wisconsin for a short period of time when I was a young girl. So it's close to my heart. I have a lot of friends and family there. Wonderful people in the Midwest, really good hearted people that have been swayed by the GOP and tricked. And there's a number of reasons why we know we've gone into this whole racial inequalities and this fear of being replaced that a lot of white Americans feel, and the stronghold of white supremacy, no matter what color you are. But we have two hospitals in Wisconsin that are major teaching hospitals, one in Milwaukee and one in Madison, Wisconsin. And they are overrun. They're packed, they're filled to capacity. The doctors are gonna have to start triaging to who gets a ventilator, who lives and who dies. This is in our country, John. This is during few days before an election, and this president continues to lack the federal leadership. So for Chuck Todd to get on his little high horse with his terrible hair plugs and tell us that it is not it's not as big of a deal as it is. It's disgusting and he should be fired from his job. I'm saying that and I stand by it. And he needs to go back to the hair club for men. No offense to other people who are missing hair.
I will stress that point. Okay, so acknowledge that Donald Trump doesn't care enough about COVID, but is it possible that my co-host Viviana cares too much about it? That's what I ask you, audience. God, it's such nonsense. It's such nonsense. I mean, look, Chuck Todd,
if you're watching, she was in tears, John. She's been a healthcare provider for over 35 years. It is breaking her heart that people are dying for this lack of consideration for public health information. Yeah. It's mind-boggling.
Well, I can't imagine having dealt with the first wave. It's not the first wave. It's the first wave of the first wave. But anyway, the first and then the second. And then getting past it finally, and the numbers go down a little bit. And then seeing it start up for a third time, how could you process that as a healthcare professional? I don't know. So my heart goes out to them. And it's other states as well. I think it was Idaho is gonna have to decide when to start taking people off of their ventilators. Because like if you're, like hypothetically, you need this ventilator to survive, but you're not recovering fast enough. Sorry, we got to take you off because there's not enough. That's what they're going to be doing. We have death panels throughout the country.
Let's keep in mind who was not a triaged patient. Let's keep in mind Donald Trump. He wasn't feeling well, so he went in, boom, stem cells, the whole thing. Yep. This is not what Americans receive, partly because we have a horrific healthcare system that happily lets people die and suffer. But we have people that are struggling to even pay for regular bills. They don't even know if they can afford to go to the doctor. So a lot of them are not even getting the help that they need when they can. They get there too late. To be able to say that we live in a country that will consider people just dying as part of, you know, the cost of doing business. And that's how Trump sees this. And it's really offensive to me that we have seen him continually use this coronavirus as a political strategy and not to care about the people, but to how to get reelected. And then he fumbled that ball too. Like, listen to the experts around you. It's pretty gross. We had another story that we were going to talk about, but I also think it's reprehensible some of these GOP and administration members that are coming forth and going, oh, Trump's a bad guy. Oh, Trump did this and that. You're not going to make money off of this now. That's disgusting what you're doing. It was disgusting then. You sat by while kids were in cages and now you want to come out and write a book about it. No, you don't get to do that. Your reign is over. You're done. In the words of Donald Trump, the only thing he ever did that added to this country, you're fired. We're done with you.
I dispute that that added anything to the country, but I like all of your other points, so I'm gonna let it slide. And so, okay, let me answer Chuck Todd's question, and while also noting that Chuck Todd, they're never gonna love you. I don't know how I can convince you of that. They call you a sleepy Chuck Todd. They hate your guts as much as they hate Van Jones and Rachel Maddow and all of that. I guess
and they're trying to be liked. They're trying to be liked so bad. They're not gonna like you.
Yeah. It's
the left doesn't like you.
Yeah, exactly. You've put yourself in a great position. But he still has his job, so I guess it's okay. The joke's on me. He gets paid millions of dollars every year. But anyway, to answer the question, is Joe Biden caring about it too much? No. So let's take a look at the most recent numbers. Again, remember, this is just days out from a presidential election. 79,000 cases reported in the last daily reporting. 45,000 people in hospitals right now for COVID. And what do you know, the COVID death toll was over 1,000 again. Just for one day. I will never be able to stop pointing out how crazy it is that 1,000 people can die in just one day. And it's kind of news. A little bit, kind of. It's only 250 Benghazis in one single day. And so, no, I think that Joe Biden should probably take it seriously. And I would argue that he's probably benefiting electorally from the fact that he appears to take it seriously and Donald Trump couldn't care less.
Absolutely, as the numbers rise, the support for Donald Trump declines. Too many people are sick, too many people are losing loved ones. They're not able to see their loved ones when they're in the hospital. This was the wrong strategy. If he was trying to be a strategist, you failed. And it's reprehensible. I honestly, all of these people who are part of this, it's inexcusable and you should be ashamed of yourself. This is gonna be a stain on your character for life. And it's a stain on this country. We won't ever forget 9/11. We'll never forget. Well, we won't forget this either. Never.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're gonna be trying to explain to our grandkids someday how horrendous this time is, assuming that grandkids are still a thing in the future. And we won't be able to. The fact that we're having, you know, a third of a 9/11 of American deaths every single day, and we're fighting for months to convince people that that's a bad thing. But anyway, you mentioned the strategy there, so let's turn now to that. A lot of people are clearly being influenced in this election on how exactly Joe Biden versus Donald Trump will do on coronavirus. It doesn't seem to be helping Donald Trump, but his team still thinks that that's a distinction that's gonna help him. Take a look at Kayleigh McEnany talking about their two different strategies on the pandemic.
Look, the American people have a very clear choice when it comes to COVID. You can vote on Joe Biden, or you will be locked down. Your schools will be closed. Your churches will be closed. You won't have social gatherings. It will be a lockdown versus President Trump, where we are safely reopening this country. Americans deserve jobs. They deserve freedom. Joe Biden's modeling his strategy, which is lockdown in the basement. But this president has surged therapeutics and testing and a vaccine in record time. We can control this. But at the same time, we can open this country and not lock down like Joe Biden will do.
Viviana, are you convinced? What do you think?
I mean, here's somebody who had coronavirus. It's so under control that the whole administration got it and Pence's staff got it. And she herself had it. And for her to sit there and lie, I know we see her lie every single day, but it is just laughable at this point. I mean, we all know this girl we went to high school with. She's a lying. We sat next to her in history class and she was just there putting makeup on her face. That's all she was worried about, what people thought. She's getting paid a lot of money, John. She's getting a lot of people. She's getting paid a lot of money to watch people die. That's what she's doing. She's no different than the SS guards. She really isn't. She's just getting paid to do her job, right? No, you have to have character. You have to have a moral background. This whole administration is disgusting. The things that they have sat back and allowed. And then for her to actually be the mouthpiece and to come. And then we're going to see in 2 years, this bitch is going to come out with a book. Oh, well, I didn't want to, but I just had to. No, you're done. We're done with you and your disgusting face. I don't care what she said. It's all lies.
You're gonna see a lot more of her face because she's gonna be like a commentator on CNN getting like $1 million a year.
That's what's disgusting. That is what's disgusting. And just like Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly got a show and then she said, well, that was a good debate. Oh, why? Because he didn't he didn't comment on you menstruating this time. So that was a good debate
this
for
time.
You. But last time it was about like this is disgusting. These people are in it just for the money. And this is the problem with politics. It has bled into the media. This is why Donald Trump got elected, because we don't have faith in our leaders and we cannot have faith in people that will flip-flop in the media just like this. That's why your show is so important, John. Thank you for being here. And for being a voice of reason in this chaos.
Thank you. I've got your back though. Last Friday, Megyn Kelly was my garbage person for that exact comment, actually. but anyway, I'm glad that you pointed out the Kayleigh McEnany, who you gotta love the contrast. They even had it was on Fox News. She's screaming at you that that we're doing great on the pandemic as 80,000 new coronavirus cases is the lower third there. That's amazing. But again, she doesn't have to worry about it because she's a member of our political elite. So she got the fancy underground monkey meds and she recovered quickly, just like Donald Trump did. But those meds are not available to us plebes. You're not gonna be able to get it. You're gonna end up sitting on a cot in some tent that's been hastily set up to deal with the overflow of cases. One of the most notable fail sons in all of America, Jared Kushner, was apparently also talking with Bob Woodward. It went really well for Donald Trump. Let's take a look at some of what Jared Kushner, exactly. But Jared Kushner all along, this is not new. These are conversations he was having with, you know, a journalist Bob Woodward for some time. So we're gonna work through a little bit of what he said, but let's set the stage. In a taped interview way back on April 18th, Kushner told Bob Woodward that Trump was, quote, getting the country back from the doctors in what he called a quote, negotiated settlement. Kushner also proclaimed that the US was moving swiftly through the panic phase and pain phase of the pandemic, and that the country was at the beginning of the comeback phase. That was on April 18th. Now, many, many Americans had died at that point, but far more hadn't yet died and would. And here you have this guy who's never earned anything in his life, whether wealth, nor position, nor prestige, nor media coverage, anything like that, telling us, no, we already got past that. We had the pain already. We're gonna be just fine. And I wanna play a little bit of audio for you, and then we'll dive in. So here's a bit of Kushner.
There were three phases. There was the panic phase, the pain phase, and then the comeback phase. I do believe that last night symbolized kind of the beginning of the comeback phase. That doesn't mean there's not still a lot of pain and there won't be pain for a while, but that basically was, we've now put out rules to get back to work. Trump's now back in charge. It's not the doctors. They've kind of, we have like a negotiated settlement.
So that's crazy and heartless, but yeah, Trump did kind of take back control from the doctors, and the ever rising case and hospitalization and death count, I think tells us all we need to know about how that worked as a strategy.
What can you answer this for me, John? Because I'm a little unclear. I mean, we know he's a moron, but what is a negotiated settlement? How is that related to this process?
Quite simply, so if you are a person who's just been handed real estate projects and wants to pretend that you're smarter than you are, you would throw terms like negotiated settlement into areas where they don't apply at all. And that's what he's done. And I really think that's the whole thing. I think he's kind of a dumb person.
He's like the easement and the he's just throwing things out there. You know, yeah. This idiot Kushner, who has one of the most annoying voices I've ever heard, he told Woodward what we already knew. We already knew that the president's COVID response was not focused on the people, it was focused on his reelection. We already knew, this is confirmation. Like, did we know that they knew it was so clear? They actually plotted this out. Our suspicions were real. He wanted to put all of the onus on the state and the governors so that he could distance himself to any failures. And we knew he wanted to own the reopening so that he could be the savior. And we know he wants to own the vaccine so he can be the savior, the best, the one and only. And I just can't believe that this family keeps talking to this man. How does Woodward do it? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just horrendous. You're right. They go into the strategy, and you know what? Why don't we talk about that? Because I have some to say about that. So here he is describing a bit about the strategy to Bob Woodward.
So with testing now, what he's been saying is don't fall into the same trap that we fell into the first time. The states have to own the testing. The federal government should not own the testing, and the federal government should not own kind of the rules. It's got to be up to the governors because that's the way the federalist system works. But the president also is very smart politically with the way he did that fight with the governors to basically say, no, I own the opening. Because again, the opening is going to be very popular. People want this country open. But if it opens in the wrong way, the question will be, did the governors follow the guidelines we set out or not?
Yeah, except that that's not what actually ended up happening. If the reopening doesn't go well, no, they wanted us to just blame the governors or whatever, but Donald Trump has been saying we need to reopen the schools, we need to reopen everything over and over and over. And somehow Jared Kushner couldn't predict that if people were dying and Trump was saying no, we need to reopen anyway, that some of the blame might fall to him. And we're seeing that the effect on the election every day. That genius strategy that they had was stupid. And I would argue it doesn't take hindsight to realize that telling people they need to pretend that everything's back to normal when the cases and deaths keep going up, as we knew they would if we reopened prematurely, it doesn't take a genius to know that that's a dumb strategy. And indeed, we didn't have a genius, unfortunately, involved in this strategy. We had people like Jared Kushner and Mike Pence and that sort of thing.
And how obscene is it to say that the president was politically smart to fight with the states? Why are you fighting with the states during a pandemic? You're proud of this? It's disgusting. Like I said earlier, it's reprehensible. And I cannot believe that this guy is so stupid to speak to this journalist and to actually say these words. I mean, he might as well throw in eminent domain. He might as well throw in all these. I don't know where he thought that this was okay. This is not a business negotiation where you just have like, well, that's just the cost of doing business. These are people's lives. You are the leader of the country. Your job is to protect your citizens. And this is disgusting that you think it's a smart political move to go head to head with governors.
Yeah.
This is what the Federalists wanted. No, they didn't. This is not what they wanted.
Yeah, what they probably wanted was leadership. I imagine if Canada invaded, I don't think the American people would be like, you know what? It's really on the governors. I like that Trump is standing up to North Dakota. Yeah, no, and that doesn't actually work that way.
He stands up to North Dakota and Michigan, but not Russia.
Exactly. So the issue, what I always look for is, because we never know It's very difficult to say when people that do and say crazy things, when they are true believers, when they're doing something based on a true belief, or they're just, you know, trying to deceive you or whatever. And in terms of pushing for the reopening, I would assume that they knew it wasn't going to work, but they still thought that it would be in their short-term interest, whether in terms of the stock market or in terms of politics. Based on at least Jared Kushner in these conversations, they seem to really think all of the doctors and scientists were wrong. They seem to really think, no, it is just magically gonna go away. There's no reason to believe that, but we're gonna run with that. And I think this last clip we're gonna play sort of gets to the idea that they were overconfident, needlessly overconfident.
I learned this early on that neither party's really a party. They're collections of tribes, right? And so the Republican Party was a collection of a bunch of tribes. And then, you know, parties as they grow tend to be more about being exclusive than inclusive. And so, you know, you look at like the Republican Party platform, it's a document meant to like piss people off basically more, you know, 'cause it's done by activists.
Yeah.
So you have a disproportionality between what issues people are vocal on and what the people, the voters really care about. And what Trump's been able to do is I say he's basically did a full hostile takeover of the Republican Party. And I don't think it's even as much about the issues. I think it's about the attitude.
He's just not that smart of a person. Like, all of this is not just about your stupid intra-party politics. Like, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of lives. And even if you don't care about that, even if you're effectively like the world's tiniest vampire, that is going to come to bite. We're in an election year, you idiot. Like, yeah, you can't let hundreds of thousands of people die and think that it's not gonna take a toll on you in the election. Whether you've had the hostile takeover, which again, to your point, is just needless real estate speak, or business speak. Sure, yeah, you've done that. Okay, now you're in charge of that party. Wouldn't you like to win the election? Maybe don't let a mountain of corpses pile up. Maybe that would be wise politically.
So disconnected to reality to say that people's views, it's people dying. Deaths are not views. These are people who are ill. And he goes on to talk about how, you know, these are tribes. No, these are scientists and doctors. I mean, Dr. Fauci has worked for decades. The man is 80 years old. He's seen us through epidemic after epidemic. And here he is speaking the truth and his own. This is under his, you know, this is under Donald Trump. He's supposed to be reporting to Trump, telling him all these things. And time again, we see these people replaced by yes men. Now, this is not someone who's doing a hostile takeover and trying to take control of these tribes, as he called it. But this is someone who's an extreme narcissist who doesn't want anyone around him that tells him no. He just wants yes men, and that is extremely dangerous. We see it in how Michael Jackson died. We see it, I mean, when you only have people around you that are saying yes, whatever you want, that's when people get hurt.
How did that work for George Lucas? How did that work for George Lucas?
Red Tails.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, okay, I can't take any more. There's more of Kushner. If you wanna look online, CNN has a great write-up of some of his insane quotes. He should have never been involved in this. We know early on he was involved in the decision to scale back the money going to things like personal protective equipment, things like that, because he made the decision, Jared Kushner made the decision that a lot of that would be going to blue states and who cares about them. If we were in a real democracy that actually cared about the actions of our leaders, Jared Kushner would end up in prison someday. Unfortunately, that's probably not going to happen, but it's well deserved. The only position in his life he's actually earned is that cell, but it's probably not going to happen.
Is a stint in the penitentiary.
Exactly. You want to turn to something pathetic? How about that? Something more pathetic, arguably, than Jared Kushner. Let's talk about this now. Tucker Carlson's been going 24/7 on Hunter Biden recently because he's a serious news person who cares about things that are true and accurate. Now, I want you to bear that in mind as we go into this next clip, because Tucker Carlson is gonna tell you about how he was gonna have a big scoop about Hunter Biden, and then this supposedly happened.
Eve them are my executive producer, Justin Wells, and I were in Los Angeles preparing to interview Tony Bobulinski about the Biden's business dealings in China, Ukraine, and other countries. So we texted a producer in New York and we asked him to send those documents to us in LA, and he did that. So Monday afternoon of this week, he shipped those documents overnight to California with a large national carrier, a brand name company. that we've used, you've used countless times with never a single problem. But the Biden documents never arrived in Los Angeles. Tuesday morning, we received word from the shipping company that our package had been opened and the contents were missing. The documents had disappeared. Now, to its credit, the company took this very seriously and immediately began a search. They traced the envelope from the moment our producers dropped it off in Manhattan on Monday all the way to 3:44 a.m. yesterday morning. That's when an employee at a sorting facility in another state noticed that our package was open and empty. Apparently, it had been opened. So the company's security team interviewed every one of its employees who touched the envelope we sent. They searched the plane and the trucks that carried it. They went through the office in New York where our producer dropped that package off. They combed the entire cavernous sorting facility. They used pictures of what we had sent so that searchers would know what to look for. They went far and beyond, but they found nothing. Those documents have vanished. As of tonight, the company has no idea and no working theory even about what happened to this trove of materials, documents that are directly relevant to the presidential campaign just 6 days from now. We spoke to executives at that company a few hours ago. They seemed baffled and deeply bothered by this, and so are we.
Oh God. Okay, so we're gonna have updates on this. They have no idea and no working theory. God, the way he delivers those scripted lines is so, how did he ever get an audience? But he has one. Like, you need to bear in mind, as you're watching this is pathetic. The dog ate my conspiracy segment from Tucker Carlson is not an offhand comment. That is a full scripted thing. He made the core of his show and he has the biggest audience of any cable news show. News show, despite the fact that, you know, a court, like his lawyers defending him in a court case said nobody watching his show would actually expect him to be telling the truth. That was literally their legal defense of Tucker Carlson. But he's telling you, I had all these documents and I was gonna show and then they all disappeared. That happened. That happened. That's a thing that happened.
Yeah, one time I tried to pay my electric bill and I sent the check in the mail and then I told them I sent the check. I sent you the check and they did not care. I had to pay it anyway. It's not how it works. And actually, I hadn't sent the check. It's the same thing. I didn't get your email. You got the email. A lot of people use these kind of. And guess what? If he's going to say that, guess what, Tucker? I had the pee-pee tape. I had the pee-pee tape. I sent it in the mail and now but it exists. I saw it with my own eyes. I promise you, but I don't have any proof. We have been making copies of printed word since the 15th century, John. They didn't make a copy? It's 2020. You can use your phone, just say blink, take a picture, there it is. How convenient, in Spanish we say que conveniente, that all of a sudden this doesn't work and that, you know, all of these private organizations, notice he didn't say the United States Postal Service, he said a private organization that they have so much faith in, somehow fumbled the ball and somebody decided, oh, this is an important Tucker Carlson package. It's like a Harry Potter thought, document disappearance. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, no, okay, so we're gonna get into it beyond, like if we accept that it happened, we'll talk about that. But first of all, in terms of it happening, so supposedly what happened is, for us to believe this, is that they decided to send these documents and they mailed them for some reason that's not immediately clear. So they decided to mail them. And someone along the way knew that in this envelope, which I'm assuming didn't say Hunter Biden conspiracy on it, or this is going to Tucker, y'all. I assume it didn't say that. They knew to look into it, stole the documents, left the envelope as evidence of the fact that they stole it. Didn't just take the envelope for some reason. They left it because, I mean, come on, we're criming, but we didn't want to steal the envelope too. That's what happened. That's definitely a thing that happened. Now, look, there were immediately a lot of follow-up questions about, like, dude, did you not copy them or whatever? And apparently they did, because a reporter who texted with Tucker Carlson asked him, did you make copies of those documents or did anyone take photos? And Tucker Carlson apparently responded, of course, the point is someone's reading our texts. So
okay, well, what did the document say then? Where is it at?
Well, exactly. And maybe we'll see that. But so, first of all, they're reading your text. So somebody has hacked into your phone and they're reading your text messages and getting information from those text messages that also allow them to then, in a different city in America, identify a mailing envelope to then steal that amongst all the mail in the country. Like, if you believe that this is true, there has never been a conspiracy theory as implausible as this. A flat earth, I can make the numbers work for that. I can't make the numbers work for this envelope thing. That's crazy. That's bananas. That's Dr. Johnny Bananas.
They have even upped the whole laptop conspiracy of it being in some sort of repair room. And this is even worse than that. And I'm not even sure what the controversy about Hunter is. It's like, has there been some political dealings? Yeah, we know Biden is a politician. Okay. We have hardcore evidence that Trump has his hand in all kinds of fascist cookie jars. Yet that's not enough for any Republican out there. They want to have this fictitious. And you know what's funny? It's not even this story that's making people want to vote for Trump. It's the QAnon stuff, because like we talked about, these undereducated voters who are out there just sucking all the information from Facebook, and they just want to believe that somebody's a pedophile and someone's going to save the world and get rid of all pedophiles. And it's real simplistic stuff, because as you know, John, politics is complicated. It's hard to understand. It's hard to follow. We talked about voting earlier. There's all kinds of different rules and regulations. But when you make things real simple, like bad, good, people want to follow that. And so this Hunter Biden thing is a waste of time, even for the Republican Party. Nobody understands it. And the people who might be pivotal voters who aren't going to vote anyway, probably, they're not even understanding this at all. And I don't even understand what the conspiracy is. This is a definitely a pathetic ploy from Tucker Carlson just to get ratings.
Yeah. And to create, you know, smoke where there's no fire, or whatever the metaphor is. A lot of people had fun mocking him though. Chuck Wendig, I believe he's an author, said, did you check underneath Trump's healthcare plan? That's good.
It's a big one. Like the blank one that he gave to
exactly.
60 minutes.
So I think that we all get that this is pathetic, but I would argue that this is level three pathetic. So the first level of pathetic would be making specific crazy claims about Hunter Biden and trying to make that a big story. That would be level one. Level two is trying to make the Hunter Biden thing a big story that's going to change the election when you can't even explain what the crime supposedly is. And that is very much Donald Trump. He has no idea what the laptop is or why it's important, but he's talking about it. Level three is when you can't even do that. So you like purposefully lose or make up documents, and then you try to make that the story. And he's not the only one, by the way. I would argue this is the most pathetic version of this I've seen. But we also, not that many days ago, had Fox News, this is legal and political analyst for Fox News Channel and author of The Russia Hoax and Witch Hunt, to give you an idea of where he's coming from. Greg Jarrett tweeted, I find it odd, if not curious, that the moment I hit send on my column that's highly critical of Joe Biden, my Wi-Fi service disconnected. Inexplicably, it will be out all day. Never happened before. Probably just a coincidence. I drove to the local store and sent the column. What store? But anyway, so Joe Biden, his brain is provolone cheese and he can't do anything. Also, he is in charge of literally everything. He controls your Wi-Fi. He's in your document sorter. That dude's tentacles are in it all.
Yeah, he's at the same time an idiot and a mastermind.
Exactly.
It's just really hypocritical. And we know that that is, you know, it just is, that's the roots of this administration, just hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And lies.
Don't.
And racism.
Pretend to me that you're 100% right. Let's go on. Tucker Carlson is a complete lying white supremacist hack. That's all. 100%. I don't care how big his audience gets. It doesn't make him a real journalist. It doesn't make him a real boy. He's not. He's a lying racist hack. That's it. Lying racist hacks, it turns out in America, can do quite well in terms of generating an audience. That doesn't make what they do anything better than any random racist spouting insane conspiracy theories, which is what I would argue he is doing right now.
We have 200 years to support that point you just made. Yeah, lying racist hacks.
Yeah. But they're still innovating. John Ossoff is locked in a tight race against David Perdue, and they had a debate recently, a little clip of which has gone pretty viral on social media. Here is John Ossoff taking it to David Perdue.
Well, perhaps Senator Perdue would have been able to respond properly to the COVID-19 pandemic if you hadn't been fending off multiple federal investigations for insider trading. It's not just that you're a crook, Senator. It's that you're attacking the health of the people that you represent. You did say COVID-19 was no deadlier than the flu. You did say there would be no significant uptick in cases. All the while, you were looking after your own assets and your own portfolio, and you did vote 4 times to end protections for pre-existing conditions. 4 times. And the legislation that you tout, the PROTECT Act, it includes loopholes that specifically allow insurance companies to deny policies to Georgians with pre-existing conditions. Can you look down the camera and tell the people of this state why you voted 4 times to allow insurance companies to deny us health coverage because we may suffer from diabetes or heart disease or asthma or have cancer in remission? Why, Senator?
Vivian, I'll give you first crack. What did you think about that?
He looked like he was getting a colonoscopy while he was talking to him. He was like, not only are you a crook, but you're covering your asset.
Yeah. My favorite line was, can you look directly into the camera? And I was thinking, man, he can't look anywhere except directly into the camera. He certainly isn't looking at you. Yeah. He didn't look at him once. Are they in the same room? I know there's social distancing, but I think, because Aslan's looking at him, but Purdue is like, he's like squirming, he's grinding his teeth.
That's the colonoscopy phase, John. That's it, right there.
I've seen it a million times. If I've seen it once, I haven't seen it once or a million times. But great points, man. David Perdue, like, yeah, the Republicans want to pretend that they're going to continue protections for pre-existing conditions, but he's one of many Republicans who's doing everything he can to get rid of that because he doesn't care if you have health insurance. They don't care if you live or die. They have been very, very clear about that.
Their pockets are too comfortably lined by the insurance companies to want to protect pre-existing conditions. That is the truth, that is the facts. And to sit there with your colonoscopy face and act like it isn't is disgusting. Again, add that to the list of people who have put a stain on this country, a colonoscopy
stain. I was really hoping you weren't gonna add that at the end there. I feel like I'm being hit by Brett and Francesca at the same time. Viviana is a combination of both of them. Anyway, and look, David Perdue, by the way, if you felt, you know, because you know we're libs or whatever, we can feel bad for people when they're squirming. I'm pretty sure he's the Kamala Lalalala guy, the guy who thought that mispronouncing Kamala Harris's name was so funny, you know, because she's got an un-American name. We don't have to respect it at all. That was cool.
They used to call me Viviana Vagina when I was in school. Look how well it turned out for me.
You seem okay. It's just he's a racist. That's all it is. The punchline was racism. Very funny. And so that video is up to 6.8 million views, or at least it was when I pulled the link for it. In terms of that race, though, it has been tightening. Let's take a look at the last 3 months on Real Clear Politics. You can see that it is getting close. It's just a
good point.
The latest poll from Monmouth has Asif up by 2 points, although other recent polls have had Perdue up by anything from 1 to 5 points. So Georgia is an important state, theoretically electorally for the president as well. There's been some polls that make it interesting. We don't know, it's still likely to go red. But in terms of the Senate race, it's a close one and turnout is going to be crucial there. Do you want Perdue as your senator, Georgia? That squirmy guy who's gonna take away your insurance and possibly make fun of your name? I don't think so.
No, Ossoff did a great job of keeping holding his feet to the fire. Very, very happy he did that.
I think so. Well, that's all the time we have. Viviana, as always, thank you so much for joining us. What are you gonna be talking about in the near future on your show?
Well, I think I really wanna get into body image. I have a professor who's done a lot of work on body image. And you know, as much as it's not like a hot button issue, it's still really, really important. And thinking about our youth as this increase in social media and TikToks and et cetera, et cetera. We need to really focus on, for me, the solution is not objectifying our own bodies or those of others. And if we teach both young men and young women that as we're growing up and to accept their own bodies, I think we have a lot more body acceptance, but we need to work on this objectification that's happening. So that will be the next episode of Contextualize This. But I do want to bring on my special guest. Hold please.
Oh, we're gonna get a special guest. And I think if you've been watching for a while, you know what sort of special guest this is. The four-legged variety, very excited for that. And I'm gonna get my little document. Oh my God, the close up on Frank. He looks like a character out of Star Wars right now, actually. His ears are so Star Wars. Frank, how's it going, buddy? You been a good boy in the run up to the election?
He has already voted.
Cute dog.
Illegally. he's 14, John. He'll be 14 in January.
Oh my God.
He's very mad that I woke him up. Yeah, he doesn't. Thank you so much for having me on the show, John. I
love
it.
Thank you, as always.
Please, everyone, get out and vote. And if you're in California, vote no on 22, please. We don't want to give up our labor rights. Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you. Nice closing statement. Have a good one.
Bye, everyone.
That's adorable.
See you next time.
By the way, that her saying that Frank voted, Tucker Carlson's going to cover that to imply that the election's not valid anymore. That'll be his story tonight.
He voted in the UK. He's British. He's
dead. Yeah.
Not here in the
Don't area. Ship Frank via FedEx.
Anyway, never.
Have a good one, Vivian.
Thanks, guys. Happy birthday, Sophie.
At least in terms of the polls, Trump's odds of winning the election have not looked amazing for some time. And it's been interesting to watch some of his most stalwart defenders, whether in right-wing media or in elected Republican offices, start to modulate how they approach Donald Trump as the election gets closer. And I want to talk to the author of an amazing write-up about how some Republicans are changing their tone on Trump. We're very lucky to be joined by politics columnist for Business Insider, Anthony Fisher. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you on. And so you just had a write-up that was about some Republicans and how they're sort of changing their tone and what they're saying about Donald Trump. In your view, what are some of the standouts for those who have started to distance themselves?
Well, I think the most prominent one is got to be Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who, as I wrote, is a ruthless political tactician. He knows how to survive. He can read the tea leaves of which way the wind is blowing politically. And he's also a loyal Republican. And he, on the record, said that he avoids the White House because it's unsafe. They have unsafe COVID prevention protocols, which, as we've seen, is very, very true. That one is a particular standout. Senator Ben Sasse literally said to a group of constituents on a recorded conference call that the president kisses dictators' butts and says horrible things to women. And Congressman Riggleman, who's on his way out, said that Trump has made the Republican Party into QAnon after dark, explicitly acknowledging that the president has not only encouraged this really unhinged conspiracy theory, but he's endorsed candidates who also subscribe to that theory.
So in the past, over the past few years, Republicans who have been more critical of Donald Trump have faced strike back, whether in the form of Donald Trump, you know, attacking them at rallies or in tweets or even supporting primary opponents of theirs. Do you think that these new Republicans who are coming out against them doing that, is that a representation of them potentially thinking that that threat is no longer hanging over their head?
Well, the particular ones that I mentioned don't have much to fear from that. Sasse has his eye on running for president as a non-Trumpist in 2024, even though he's very delicately for the last 4 years basically supported almost everything Trump has done, just not the way he's done it or the way he's sounded while he's done it. Riggleman has already lost his primary. He's out. He has nothing to fear. That's why he can be brave now. And McConnell, you know, he's up for re-election right now, but it's looking very much like he will be re-elected and probably will still hold his position in the leadership should the Republicans lose the majority. So these particular examples don't have much to fear from a mad Trump base, even if Trump were to lose. Some other Republicans might be in districts or in states where they do have to fear that. But if Trump were to lose, certainly none of these sitting members of Congress would have to endure the wrath of a sitting President Trump, because he would no longer be the president. That Trumpist base, what happens to it in the event of a Trump defeat, is something that they will need to triangulate. And I wouldn't make any predictions on that. But thus far, there hasn't been a truly brave expression by a sitting Republican congressman or senator that takes meaningful issue with President Trump in a way that could potentially jeopardize their support in a primary.
That's interesting. Okay, I'm gonna try to get you to make at least a slight prediction potentially. So you mentioned there about not facing the threat of a sitting president. I guess what a lot of people who comment on politics are wondering is, what does Trump look like when he's no longer a sitting president? And how much sway does he have over that base when he's no longer in a position of power? I mean, it seems like if the idea is that someone's gonna be running for president, and I guess trying to reclaim a Republican Party from before Donald Trump, maybe they don't fear that. I'm just curious, based on your read, do you think that it's likely that that base is going to be significantly less responsive to Donald Trump's preferences when he's no longer in power? Because he's certainly still going to be on Twitter.
Oh, I think that base, I think the Republican base is the Trump base right now. What they are going to have to do practically when Trump is no longer the nominal leader of the party and the leader of the free world, they're going to have to find another path, but they will follow Trump's lead. They will, Trump's endorsements will mean something. Trump's insults will still mean something to this particular base for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. So from what you're seeing right now going into the election, the number of Republican names that you've listed is not super extensive. Does it seem like in terms of his ability to, in the past, go around and rally support for some of these politicians, bring them up on stage at rallies and things like that? Now it's not the midterms, he's running for re-election as well. Have you seen that is that much of a part of his time as he's traveling around the country? Does that seem like a thing that he's really focusing on in this last week?
No, he's focusing on himself and probably for good reason, because if Trump loses big and the Republicans lose big, that's when Trump could really lose his influence as post-presidency. He needs to do what he can to make his numbers as big as they can, both electoral college-wise and popular vote-wise. He needs to be able to make the argument that I was not rejected by a majority of the American people. One example of someone really, really tiptoeing into Donald Trump critical territory is Ted Cruz, who of course was his mortal enemy in the 2016 campaign. But Cruz is still very young and certainly wants to run for president again, and has been a good obedient Trump soldier for the past 4 years, defended him vociferously, but is already starting to tiptoe away policy-wise. Unbelievably cynically telling, I believe it was Axios, that if Trump were to lose, yes, indeed, the Republican Party would once again embrace fiscal responsibility and not things like massive increases of entitlements and spending while cutting taxes. Ted Cruz, always a fiscal conservative until Donald Trump was president, is already hinting that, yeah, he's kind of leaning that way again.
Yeah, that was with Axios, and that was an amazing interview. And I wonder, like you said, if he were to lose, how exactly, what people take away as the reason for him losing could be important for his future in the Republican Party. I wonder if the strategy right now, where they've been spending months making people question the outcome of the election, which obviously could end up having an influence on how the Supreme Court ends up ruling. Like, they clearly want some sort of influence. But even if that doesn't happen, even if the Supreme Court doesn't weigh in, it seems like a lot of Republicans have been trained to believe that there is no legitimate Biden path to victory. And so, to your point, that might seem to make it likely that Donald Trump could transition out of this thing, even if he's beaten badly, with many Republican voters still thinking that he was denied an election that he legitimately won.
Yeah, anything other than a electoral landslide and a popular vote landslide for Biden will inevitably mean a meaningful portion of the Republican electorate will not consider it legitimate. Unfortunately, this is part of our politics on both sides, and has been basically since Clinton was president, because Clinton never won an outright majority. Ross Perot ate into those votes twice. Obviously, many Democrats never considered George W. Bush a legitimate president because of the recount and the close 2000 election. Barack Obama, ridiculously, is not considered a legitimate president by a lot of Republicans who still cling to the dead end birther nonsense. And obviously Donald Trump, who lost the popular vote by 3 million votes, won the electoral college vote in three different states by, I think, a total of like 50, 60,000 votes.
Yeah.
And there will always be Democrats who believe in Russian collusion, even though that really hasn't been proven. But for all these reasons, there are people that don't consider Donald Trump a legitimate president. So we're going on now more than a quarter century where the opposition has had a substantial portion of them not accepting the president. And I don't see why that would change now.
You know, a lot of our speculation and predictions have been based on the idea that Donald Trump could theoretically lose. Let's say that Donald Trump were to win, you still have some of the Republicans that you've been citing who are going to want in 2.5 years to start spinning up their own presidential campaigns. I assume it would be more difficult to run a sort of really explicitly anti-Trump sort of campaign if he's the guy sitting in the White House while you're doing it.
Oh yeah, it'll be impossible. I mean, and honestly, I think if we want to play these imagination games, if Trump were to be reelected, I think Pence doesn't have a real easy path to the nomination if were he to run after 4 more years of Trump. Obviously, he's been the most loyal soldier, and the base really does love him because he is, Mr. Social Conservative. He's unbreakable. But there's also a real kind of frothing at the mouth populism that he won't provide. And Trump Jr. very well might provide it. Tucker Carlson might provide it. There's any number of, celebrity types, people not in government who can do what Trump did and say, I alone can fix it. And whether or not Trump would abide that, I mean, has Trump really ever been loyal to anybody outside of his, immediate family ever? Like, mm-hmm. So I could see him, saying, hey, Mike Pence, you did a great job for me, but it's Don Jr.'s turn. There's certainly a world where that could happen.
Yeah, and look, we are obviously far into those imagination games, which I obviously enjoy. He's never really struck me as a person who is particularly good at boosting other people, really. Like, he'll send out a tweet to buy someone's book or something. But the idea that let's say he loses, that in 2 years he'll be like hardcore hitting the trail, whether it's for like a Mike Pence, someone who you pointed out has been extremely loyal and quiet, like quietly loyal. Or even honestly for his son, like obviously he would want his son to beat the others, but the idea that he would put a ton of his own effort into it, I have a hard time believing. But anyway, this is again hardcore into the imagination games. In terms of just to continue on with, if Donald Trump is to win, let's say that Mitch McConnell maintains his Senate majority, in terms of the Republican Party in the Senate, the sorts of legislation they'll be pursuing and things like that, do you expect that there will be largely a continuation of the legislative and judicial strategy going forward? Or will Donald Trump theoretically not running for re-election have any sort of subtle effects on Mitch McConnell or any of the others?
I think legislatively, not much different. I think what the biggest difference in the event of Trump losing and the Republicans losing the majority in the Senate would be the end of a lot of these culture war things. I think you will not see troops amassed at the border for a stunt to keep back the hordes of Guatemalan caravans that Trump had us all wanted us all to be terrified of on the eve of the 2018 midterms. I think that kind of stuff will not be a part of a post-Trump Republican legislative push. Not that that was legislation, but I just think that those kinds of sort of meaningless things. I don't know that. Certainly when it comes to abortion and when it comes to taxes and when it comes to tough on crime judges, I think Republicans will not be changing their paths to victory on those issues at any point. But I would suspect that in a post-Trump world, a lot of the culture war stuff takes a backseat.
Interesting. Well, let's see. And whether that happens or not could have a very large influence on who ends up coming out on top in that next Republican primary. Well, Anthony Fisher, really appreciate you joining us, everybody. Anthony's writing is available at Business Insider, including if you want more information about these Republicans and their slight tiptoeing for the exits, as you put it. Anthony, thank you. We really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.